Thanks for listening to The Drive with Big Al and D-Mac, on demand, brought to you by SEL Mortgage, the leaders in Colorado of special circumstance lending, helping everyone, including people with unusual financing needs. Locally owned and operated, visit myspecialmortgage.com. That's myspecialmortgage.com.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Mountain High Appliance. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Welcome to The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Big Al and D-Mac, D-Mac's out, so I am driving with my main man, Chad Brown. And of course, man, the text line is going nuts, 303-713-1043. That's our RamosLaw.com text line. Once again, 303-713-1043. The text messages are starting to come in about this thing between Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin, while with the Carolina Panthers, had a swell time catching passes from Cam Newton. A lot of big moments those two had together in their young careers. Kelvin Benjamin came out last week and said that he would have much better production if Cam was more accurate throwing the football. Cam shot back and had a picture of Greg Olsen, said, working on my accuracy. It's a gentle slap back at him. But Kelvin Benjamin was confronted by Cam Newton before the game, and Cam walked over and just like I gave him like a chest bump, and Kelvin Benjamin gave him an elbow shrug and a forearm shiver, like, get off me, bro. Like, get off me, bro. And I can't believe some of y'all, you know, some of the text messages are coming in.
I have yet to see one that says, that sees that video as you see it. Big Al, you are terrible at reading signals. Cam bumped his chest against Benjamin, not a friendly gesture. He was stirring the pot.
It is a totally.
Big Al, I love you, man, but you are wrong on this. Just saw the video. Cam wanted answers.
Cam came over to talk to him like, why do we have beef? I mean,
I'm with Chad. I watched the video again. Big Al, Chad's 100% right. Al is so wrong. That handshake was the most passive-aggressive thing ever. The handshake meant, why are you talking bullcrap, bruh?
And I am a huge Cam Newton fan. Don't get this wrong.
But I doubt that the
smile on the face and the handout and, you know, me coming to you in a preseason game, you play receiver, I play quarterback. Why? I don't get it, man. I just don't. Wait a minute. Should Cam have said nothing to Kelvin Benjamin?
Yes. Stay on your sideline. Stay on your sideline. Unless you're coming over.
You know what? I can do the show just like this. With my back to you.
Yeah, you certainly can.
I can do it just like this because I don't need to look at you right now, bro. Because, I mean, something's not right. Something's not right here. You and I have, you know, your professional etiquette doesn't meet my standards. And a pregame handshake with former teammates, I don't see where the beef really is.
The beef.
I can't do this with you today, bro.
The beef did not start on the field. The beef started with Kelvin Benjamin and Cam a long time ago.
Kelvin came out with this public statement, right. not Cam.
Right. So Kelvin Benjamin was wrong. But that doesn't mean Cam Newton needs to join him in Wrongville. When players leave teams, they talk stuff about the coach who was there. Should that coach go confront that player in preseason warm-ups and pregame warm-ups?
We're not talking about coach and players, dude. Yeah. We're talking about players and players.
Okay. So
if you're a teammate of mine and I come up to you and I give you a chest bump on your shoulder, like, what's up with you, bruh? You're telling me that you're going to be upset with me? I'll turn and look at you. So you're going to tell me you're going to be upset with me?
So Ben Roethlisberger needs to confront Emmanuel Sanders about things that Emmanuel Sanders said about him?
You know what? I don't know if he needs to confront him, but I would think that Ben and Emmanuel, if Ben walked over to Emmanuel before a game and Emmanuel started the crap, right? He started it, and Ben put his hand out to shake his hand. I'm quite sure Emmanuel Sanders would shake his hand.
If Cam had just walked over and done what you described.
It was a playful move, Chad.
If Cam had done what you had just described, then Kelvin Benjamin would have been wrong to do what he did. But considering Cam's posture, Cam's chest bump that preceded the attempt at the handshake, Kelvin Benjamin has no response other than to, hey, man, back off. You gonna put your chest on me, dude?
Okay, you can back up off me. Okay, I backed up off of you, man. What's going on? I just came to say what's up.
Then we're cool.
You shake my hand?
Then I would shake your hand. If that had been...
That didn't look like that's what happened.
In my mind, and clearly...
You're a terrible sign reader.
The text line's mind...
That's one person that's texting multiple times.
No, that's the 315. That's the 303. That's the 970.
They don't. You know what? Terrible husbands. Those are terrible husbands that are texting you, because if you've seen this video, clearly Cam Newton was coming over in a friendly gesture to shake his old teammate's hand.
Man,
Cam, do you want to read any of the ones that support me or no?
Because there aren't any. Don't worry. I'll wait.
Okay.
Give me the Jeopardy music, Big Sexy, because I'll be waiting a while. Al is wrong.
Chad's.
Big Al, wrong. Chad, 100% correct.
Al is spot on. Cam is smiling when he walks over. There you go.
Okay, there's one. Even a blind squirrel can find a nut every once in a while. Cam was looking for a fight. Never saw the smile on him when he went up to Kelvin Benjamin.
You saw the smile anyway.
I saw a disingenuous
same guy,
smile.
There's a same guy keeps texting, I was wrong. Here's a guy. What Kelvin Benjamin did was completely wrong. That's not how you deal with other people. Al is right. Even if there's beef, you should have a little respect enough to shake hands.
Again, I would agree
with
that. If the chest bump hadn't happened. I think there's some
Cam Newton hating going on out there. Is there a contingency of people that don't like Cam Newton?
Oh, huge.
Why?
Huge.
Why?
Well, you disrespect a female reporter in a news conference.
Oh, that was big. That was last year. Go ahead.
Okay, the post Super Bowl news conference. The list of things is long.
Chad, you weren't there for that one. Let me explain what happened in the post Super Bowl.
Chris Harris Jr. was on the other side of the partition.
No, dude. Partition. It was a curtain.
Right. Okay, a screen.
So
yeah, you can hear Chris Harris
is on one side, uh-huh, yapping it up about how they were going to beat the Carolina Panthers, and they knew everything that they were doing, and Cam couldn't make the throws.
Yeah.
And Cam was literally 3 feet away from him.
Right.
And that partition was a cloth,
yeah,
a piece of cloth.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the winning Super Bowl guy over here saying that Cam, you know, we knew what we could do against Cam, and that, you know, we knew that they couldn't throw the ball against us. We knew we had them beat. And you have the losing quarterback on the other side. You telling me that's okay?
No, I'm not saying that's okay. But it presented a unfortunate, ugly picture of Cam for folks who don't have the details on the story. I can completely see where Cam was coming from. You don't want to hear that at that moment, but it made Cam look petty. It made Cam look shallow, and it made him look like a sore loser.
Oh. Okay.
I'm not alone, and no other people who are anti-Cam on the text line alone. Cam definitely needs some coaching up on how to make himself more relatable and make himself more agreeable to the public.
Oh, Big Sexy, what'd you have for me? What'd you have for me? I can't pull this up here. What did you have for me? The players not standing for the anthem.
There were a couple players for the Dolphins that didn't stand for the national anthem during the national anthem against the Buccaneers just a little bit ago.
Wow. So
we have Kenny Stills and Albert Wilson who decided to kneel, and we have Robert Quinn who raised a fist during the national anthem. Now, this is on the heels of the NFLPA and the NFL deciding to...
Welcome to football season!
...shelve the proposed rule, or the rule that the NFL tried to enforce. So they are talking right now, but, you know, there aren't going to be any punishments right now handed down by the NFL or teams, as far as I'm aware, for players that decide to demonstrate during the national anthem.
Wow.
You knew it wasn't going to go away. I think there was an opportunity to make it go away, but the owners did what they did. You know, the president has, you know, stepped into the arena a few times on this topic recently. So, you know, the players at some point, we're not going to let this issue die without having the chance to either push back or have their say. Now, I know the PA, as Big Sexy talked about, and the league are trying to get together and the players trying to get together and form a policy that all that can agree upon. But this unfortunately is going to remain a topic, at least through the preseason.
Okay. The Cam Newton comments are coming in. Now we have more information about the pregame rituals, as pregames are taking place across the USA, because on the East Coast it's 7-11, and we are starting to see what the players this year are doing with the national anthem. And already we have teams that are not aligned about how they uniformly will go out and handle this situation. Chad, is it a team thing or is it an individual thing? In my most team-oriented tone, I certainly think that this is a team thing, one way or the other. Because, you know, I watched the NBA gracefully handle a similar situation standing for the national anthem. Now, if you get upset with me, that's fine. But I believe that standing for the national anthem is the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. After I've traveled around this great country of ours and traveled around the world, certainly we must stand for something, right? We must stand for something, and I understand what this is. This is not about a disrespect for our troops. I didn't say that. I just said simply you should stand for the national anthem. Mm-hmm. Now, you don't have to agree with me. And there will be some that will disagree with me. But I do believe you should stand for the national anthem. And if you want to protest a different way during another time period, fine. But I'm one of those traditionalists. And if I was a team captain, I think Chris Harris has come out with this. I think the Broncos uniformly have come out with a policy that said that they're going to stand for the national anthem. But you have some strong personalities on different teams that, even in a new year, when we have the Players Association talking and we have the league talking about uniformity, about how we're going to deal with this, we can't get unification on the first game.
Jaguars writer for ESPN, his name is Michael DiRocco, reports Telvin Smith, Jalen Ramsey, Leonard Fournette, and TJ Yeldon were not on the field with the rest of the Jaguars for the playing of the national anthem. They did come out of the tunnel a few moments later. They're working to determine if it was related to any sort of protest.
Yeah, this is going to keep being.
What is this?
This is going to keep being a topic.
What is this? What's going on here?
I, like you, would like to see teams, you know, present a uniform for that team policy. But beyond that, I'd like to see the entire league present a uniform policy. But this thing has been so badly handled from the very beginning. For those players who want to use that time to protest,
have a voice,
you keep backing them into a corner. You know, Kaepernick has essentially been kicked out of the league and blackballed out of the league.
Absolutely, he has been.
Because of his stance on this. And he's donated millions of dollars. He's involved in community programs.
Colin Kaepernick should be in the NFL. So clearly, Colin Kaepernick belongs with the level of backup quarterback play that we have here in Denver. Colin Kaepernick should be at least the number two here in Denver.
So for those players who want to say, wait, you know, I'm exercising my rights because you took away his attempt to be employed because of what he did. Then you have those who are protesting because this has become incredibly political and been used as a politically divisive device by our president and our vice president. So maybe it's not so much about the actual injustice protest anymore, but just the fact that you're trying to take away my rights to do this. You're telling the league to throw me out of, not just stop me from being employed, but to throw me out of the country for my attempts to do this.
It's just not uniformed in a team game. In a team game, I like uniformity. I like the fact that you have to pull your socks up. I like the fact that your jersey has to be tucked in. You know, I like the fact that, you know, you have to wear a certain color tennis shoes or cleats if you're playing outdoors. Uniformity is been just, I guess, just part of my sports experience. To see it disjointed is almost, you know, unreal to me. It's almost unreal. Just and I know it's, we're just talking about a pregame ritual here, but we're also talking about a national anthem that is being played. I'm a little, you know, this has been handled so clumsily by the league and the Players Association, where I knew it was going to be an issue. It just feels like we're getting off to the start of another great football season with more things that we're talking about that we shouldn't have to be talking about. There are so many battles in training camp for positions and what's going on, these social issues that are surrounding football. And football in particular is different. It is different than the other leagues. And because you have over 2,000 players in training camp, 2,600 players, maybe you're not going to get uniformity. But isn't it up to ownership to explain to their employees how they want them to behave, or you say no?
Okay, a couple thoughts.
Because you're a business owner, so be careful how you answer this.
Okay, a couple thoughts. You talked about the NBA. The NBA owners and Adam Silver has been in full support of the players' right to protest, to wear hoodies in pregames, to pull off their shirts and have don't stop, don't shoot, and all that kind of stuff in pregame warmups. So a little different understanding between the owners and the players in the NBA. So you can't really make a clear comparison between the NBA and NFL, because the NFL owners seem to be much more conservative and much more.
No, I'm not talking about that, but I mean the fact that the guys have gotten together and started wearing hoodies. Yeah. In pregames,
right.
that is a real, you know, like a look at me moment, and the entire league does it. As a matter of fact, Nike supplies those pregame hoodies, if you will, for the team.
Right, but again, that's with the approval of ownership and with the approval of the league office. So it's much more everyone's on the same page versus the incredibly divided positions we have with, you know, Jerry Jones coming out after the league said don't say anything and saying what he had to say. So the difficulty in comparing the NBA and NFL is that, because they're not on the same page, the owners in the league, as they are in the NBA. As far as desire to have a uniform face to this, I wish that could be the case. But in so many ways, sports reflect society. Our society is incredibly divided. I always thought of sports as being ahead of society. When, you know, Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball, that was before those kind of things were possible in other parts of society.
Right. Before you could do that at a Woolworths counter.
Right,
or
right.
Before you could do that at a bus stop.
Right.
Or
drinking fountains,
right,
hotels. I
right.
mean, all that kind of stuff.
I get that.
So sports was always ahead, but now
right.
sports is a direct reflection of the divisiveness we have in society. Each time I come on this radio show, certain people tweet me to give me their pushback on what they think may be my political opinions that I have not even discussed during the show, but maybe I've discussed in the past. They saw a tweet months ago. They choose to poke at me politically because they have a different opinion than what I have. And I think that just simply reflects where we are as a society, this division we have in the league, because if the players were to back down, do you think the president and the vice president are going to take the high road and not say anything? Or are they going to take their knife and stick it in further into the players who are already feeling unheard and disrespected?
Eagles beat writer Jeff McClain tweeted out 17 minutes ago, Michael Bennett walked out onto the field just after the national anthem started at the Eagles-Steelers game.
So this is unfortunately going to be a topic. While we want to talk football and depth charts and X's and O's and schemes and backup quarterbacks, this is not going to go anywhere just because of where our country is right now.
Okay.
Sports used to be able to bring us together.
I need to work my way back into sports because that's what this is all about. But, okay. Sorry, that just kind of jumped all over me just now. I wasn't expecting this today. I thought we were just going to have football today, but clearly tomorrow we'll have conversation that will surround other things outside of football. This depth chart has been released. I have a list of players that I am looking forward to seeing. Royce Freeman is on that list. D'Angelo Henderson is on that list. And, of course, I want to see what's going on at offensive line because I think we have a starting player that is running on the second team, and that starting player is none other than number 77, Billy Turner. Crazy day.
All right.
I'll tell you what. We're going to do this a little early so I can reset after we come back from break, but this is The Drive. Big Al and D-Mac. Chad Brown is sitting in. We reset this show to talk about this offensive starting lineup versus this defensive starting lineup. And maybe there's a quarterback out there that we can get that's on another roster after the break.
Sandy Clef here to tell you about SCL Mortgage Special Circumstance Lending, locally owned and operated. And if you're self-employed or work on commission, this is the place for you. Bank statement loans are back. You don't need tax returns to do your loan. In some cases, the bank statement loans can be done with credit scores in the low 600s. MySpecialMortgage.com on the web. 303-790-2222, the phone number. SCL Mortgage, licensed by the Colorado Department of Regulatory Agencies, number 1200716.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Body Armor Sports Drink. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
Chad, before we get to this story about the quarterback that is out there, I have to ask you about something that happened that I saw in the offseason, and it was just highlighted again. And I want to get your take on it because I know you've seen the story because I sent it to you. Kellen Moore, the former Boise State quarterback, is now the quarterback's coach of the Dallas Cowboys.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Kellen is only, I think, 26 years old. I think he may have just turned 27. How does that fit with you? You know, I say on this show all the time, there are some high school coaches around here that will run circles around NFL coaches, and I don't say it to be a downer for the NFL community, but I know how this business works. You hire people that are fundamentally aligned with you, not that they are the greatest coaches, because there's no way in the world you can say that this is the right move to hire Kellen Moore to be your offensive quarterback coach. When is that okay? When is that okay to hire a guy who just retired? Okay, you tell the coach, I want to become a coach, and he said, you're my quarterback's coach. Last year, he was a backup to Dak Prescott. This year, he's his quarterback coach. With hardly any experience, how is that okay in the NFL?
It's so circumstantial. Who is this player? What's his background? Was his dad a coach? You know, did he play and was coached by people who run similar systems to what we're asking our guys to run? So there's multiple factors in that. But I think
his dad was a coach. His uncle is a coach.
So he comes from a coaching background, and I think there's certain players who coaches quickly understand your ability is not going to allow you to stay long in this league, but your mind, your prowess for the game, your X's and O's skills, your ability to relate to other people, your ability to teach things can make you a great coach. And almost every team I've been around, there's been one or two guys on that team who seem to fit that mold really well.
I'm not, and I don't doubt that, but I'm just saying, how do you go, what does that mean about your profession? You know, this is why Urban Meyer is in trouble right now, because he hired a friend of his, Earl Bruce's grandson, and now he's sitting on the outside trying to wait for a way in because he was doing a solid for a friend of his grandson. Now, this is crazy to me. I like the fact that you have more players that are involved in pro football, but to say a guy took off his cleats and pads, who's only played in two games in his NFL career, is now going to be your quarterback's coach? I like the fact that he's a former player that's in professional football. I never hate on that. But I do believe that there are some dues that you must pay at some level, right?
So the coaching thing, I think there's a couple different factors that are involved in, as a head coach or the GM who's bringing coaches in or whatever the case may be. Obviously, your ability to – that you know football from whatever it's your coaching background or your playing background.
Even if you're not that good at it, you know it.
You know it, yes. So knowing football is different than playing football.
Well, this is what I've always been told. The higher your profile, the less likely you'll be hired to be part of a coaching staff because coaches don't want – guys with high-profile experience and winning ways to be on their staff because they need to be the loudest voice in the room. It would be incredibly difficult to have a Hall of Fame quarterback coach on your team when you're the head coach because his vision of what the quarterback should do may be different than yours, and his voice may be louder than yours, so coaches don't want that around them.
I think there's a huge part of that. I mean, gosh, it took Kevin Green 5 different internships to get a coaching job in the NFL. 5.
Now, that makes no sense because he had a long storied career.
15 years
in the NFL.
160 sacks, Hall of Fame.
Okay, 15 years playing in the league and having top 5 numbers in the history of the game is different than playing 5 years in the NFL or whatever it is and having two games that you played in. That's a different barrier to enter. How can this guy get in, but a guy who's played 15 years like that can't get in? A guy like you who wants to be in the coaching profession 15 years in this league and can't get in. I don't understand what the standard is, and that's why I have such a hard time believing that every team is coached the right way.
There's a huge anti-successful player bias in coaching ranks. There's no doubt about that. It couldn't be more clear to me. And the efforts you have to make to show folks that you're actually serious to be a coach once you've been a high-profile player, it's such a tall hill they ask you to climb versus Kelvin Moore who gets to walk into it just after 1 year of playing. There's that. But also coaches are concerned about, and head coaches are concerned about, we're going to spend 16 hours a day together for the next 7 months. And can you be a loyal soldier versus a guy who starts whispering to your players, man, I don't know why coach is calling that. When I played, we did it this way. I think I got a better idea. So you also have to prove your loyalty to the coach. And it takes an incredibly strong coach to be willing to hire former successful players because I think that naturally comes with it. You've been successful in other ways and you've seen it, your success in other mm-hmm. ways. You've experienced it. So you can't help but have those kind of conversations with your players and say, hey, coach wants it run this way. I personally would try it this way. Maybe we should think about it a little differently, but for now, we're going to try it the way coach asked me to run it.
Kellen Moore, 50-3 as a college player.
At Boise State, right?
As far as wins go. Is that good enough? Somebody just text in, 50-3, a record for wins, that's not good enough? What you do in college football has nothing to do with coaching at the highest level. I'm going to say that on my side. You can go ahead and respond.
Okay. I don't think what you did in college football, or if you've played pro football, can determine or limit you as to who you can become as a coach.
Right.
Todd Haley, who we saw pushing back on Hugh Jackson on Hard Knocks the other night in that coaches meeting, there's a reason why Todd Haley's bounced around. As a assistant coach, your job is not to push back on the head coach. You know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
In a setting where you knew the cameras are recording what you're talking about.
Grandstanding.
So Todd Haley clearly is a good offensive coordinator. But it's more than just your ability to call plays on Sunday or, you know, install plays during the week. It's your ability to be loyal and to be a guy who everyone can get along with for 16 hours a day, or in some cases, 18 or 20 hours a day on Mondays and Tuesdays when you're grinding and you're working on the game plan.
Well, I get that. I get that. And then somebody texted in, Kellen Moore got his job the same way you did, Big Al, right after football, just right in the radio. Not true. Actually, I did a show with Irvin Joe and Tom Green back when I was a player for the Denver Broncos. And then after I left football, I worked weekends and I worked mornings and I worked all around the radio station before I actually got a chance to get on radio. I did TV before I did radio. I didn't stop playing football and the next day I was on radio. There was a process before I became a full-time host on the radio station. I didn't see that transition. I didn't see those growing pains. I didn't see those mentorship opportunities for Kellen Moore just to get right into it. I see these things, and it's just some. You know, I like the fact that they have former players in, but there's some. You know, there are a lot of guys who are former players who can get in
a lot.
But I guess if you make it known that you want to be part of the coaching profession while you're actively playing.
It must
go a long way.
So for Kevin Green, when he retired, he did some wrestling. He was on ESPN. So he's sat out for a while before he circled back to coaching. Same thing for me. You know, my last season was 07. And I didn't do anything with football for 5 or 6 years. Then suddenly I fill in for D-Mac, because D-Mac was out. I think he was doing the X Games. I fill in for D-Mac and then do a couple shows with you. And I'm like, oh, this radio thing, I think I may enjoy this. So I started very similar to you. Weekends, crazy hours, not getting paid. Worked here for free for 6 months.
Tell me about it. I worked here for free for a year and a half, a year or so.
My first TV gigs, they paid me so little, it cost me money. It cost me more in gas and dry cleaning than I made to do the show. You know, but you work your way up the ladder. And now, same thing with coaching. I sat out long enough that I was no longer considered a contemporary. It was a guy who played a long time ago.
Got you.
Who's got to catch up. And now we need to see if he's really interested in doing the grind that an NFL coach has to do.
Let's see if he's serious.
Yes. And so at all my internship stops, that was one of the first questions asked. Are you willing to grind at this? Yeah, sure. I'll be here till midnight. That's fine. I'll be back at 5 in the morning. I know what it takes.
It's fun.
I'm a footballer. It's football for life for me. But even with that attitude and even with being willing to do whatever it takes during the internship process, you know, the doors have not just swung open for me because I was out so long.
That's a great story. It's out there today. Kellen Moore. Quarterback coach for the Dallas Cowboys last year, a backup on the team this year, the quarterback's coach.
Now, that's got to be tricky for him just from a hierarchy type of perspective, because you were subservient, in a sense, to Dak Prescott. And now you're telling Dak Prescott what to do.
So, a lot of great coaches out there who would be able to step into that position that have coached college football for a lot of years, high school for a lot of years, just got to be at the right place at the right time and know the right guy.
It is a connections business. Mm-hmm. And it is coaches don't hire off of resumes. They call people they know and say, do you know Alfred Williams? What kind of guy is he?
Right.
No matter what your resume is and your background, they want to talk to people that they know you, who can tell them the real deal. Is this a guy who I can get along with for 7 months, every single day, in my face every single day? Who is he going to be in staff meetings? What kind of reports is he going to give? When we lose 3 games in a row, is he still going to be showing up to work excited? That's what the kind of information that they want to get that they can never get from a resume.
Okay.
Really quick, from the text line before we go to break, the question is, how on earth is Kellen Moore qualified to be a quarterback's coach, but Chad Brown is not qualified enough to be an outside linebacker's coach?
Of course, that's what I was hinting at. I have a great, great name for a backup quarterback, and you're going to love who it is next.
Covering Training Camp 2018, presented by Mountain High Appliance. Here's Big Al and D-Mac.
I see your dirty face high behind your collar, but it's
welcome
done
to the
in vain. Truth.
And I think our computers may have stopped again. Okay. Here's before we get to the player that we're going to get to, somebody just text in, and I thank you guys for riding with me. I have this cold or allergy stuff that I'm rolling through, and I know my voice sounds a little different. I'm not sad because D-Mac's not here. Okay, that's not it. That's not it at all. I'm dealing with something, so I appreciate you guys rolling with me. The comment that was made that makes a lot of sense is we see guys in baseball all the time roll right into coaching and in the major leagues all the time. Yes, that does work, but those guys usually have a long, storied career.
Right.
Maybe we're talking about a guy who was a 12-year player, 15-year player, 18-year player that decides after he's done, I want to get into coaching. And he rolls right into it at the league level, at the major league level. But in football, that's the exact same way. Guys can be in it for a long time, have a long, storied career, and move right into coaching. But usually what happens is that you go into football because, you know, baseball, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, Chad. Baseball is just such an individual game where you can not even have to speak the same language and know exactly what it is to be a Major League Baseball player. In basketball, you know, there's a little more communication. And then, of course, hockey, there is a little bit of communication. But in football, there is coordination that has to start and that you have to hear for many, many months in advance. And those things have been taught and the understanding behind those concepts have been taught. I'm not telling you you can't learn it, but most of the guys are just like those guys that I just talked about. Been in the league 10, 12, 15 years, been around different coaching styles, been around different coaching groups, have been in different game situations, and not necessarily having to play big roles in those teams, but certainly being around it for a lot longer than Kellen Moore was around it. Mm-hmm. You agree or disagree?
I agree. I agree. The Kellen Moore situation, I think, highlights the thought that comfort and familiarity went out over experience, knowledge, and maybe a deeper background. To have this guy who they know, they've got no question marks about this guy because he's been on the team and it was a backup just in that room last
right.
year.
I mean, the Cowboys know him. Certainly the Cowboys know him better than any other NFL team would.
So for Jason Garrett and for Jerry Jones, we could bring a guy who presents no question marks to us versus finding some other guy who may be a more qualified on paper coach, but then we got question marks. How well does he get along? Is Dak going to like him? You know, how
that's
familiar
true.
He is?
I didn't think about that.
Is he going to come in with his own ideas?
Does Dak like him?
Yeah, so all those things are factors. And Dak is really the centerpiece of that entire franchise going forward. So we've seen it where
he's really not his coach, is he?
He's going to be more of his caretaker.
Well, was Gary Kubiak's John's coach?
I think they play, when those kind of relationships come up, they play multiple roles. They're the coach, but not like we think of when you think about some old coach on TV who's yelling at you and everything else. They're coaching the X's and O's. They're giving you what the opponent's going to do, but they're also the friend. They're also the shoulder to lean upon. They're also the insight into what the head coach is thinking. They're also that kind of relationship, you know, bridge between you and the head coach or the star quarterback and the GM. They're also, hey, in the draft, man, we're looking at these receivers. You want to give me some thoughts, what you think about these guys. A little bit of that kind of double agent, kind of mole kind of role.
Gotcha.
That would be more difficult to do with a, bringing an outside coach in who's been in the coaching for 25 years.
Right. So I know Gary Kubiak left and went to the college game and came back to the pro game for all the old – all of you guys out there that keep on putting in, Gary Kubiak did the exact same thing. He did not. He went to Texas A&M and came back to the NFL. Okay, so that's how that worked. I'm thinking about this because I've been around bad coaching staffs.
You play long enough, it's going to happen.
Yeah, I've been around guys who didn't know what they were doing.
It's been playing long enough, it's going to happen.
How often have you seen that?
Oh, man.
Have you ever been personally coached by a guy who didn't know how to coach linebackers?
Absolutely. I've been coached by a guy who couldn't throw a football. Not that that's a requirement, but it wasn't like he hurt his shoulder, and so therefore he couldn't play a football. He just simply could not throw a football.
You mean he had never played enough to learn how to throw a football?
Yeah, it was like we always had to have a ball boy with us in pregame warm-ups and warm-ups before practice and individual drills because he could not do any ball drills.
Oh, you're talking about like before the game, like the high point ball?
Yeah, all that stuff.
Or, you know, break over here, throw the ball.
Yes. He could not do warm-ups.
How long did he last?
He coached a long time. And he was a decent chalkboard coach. But his ability to take the chalkboard and to teach in a fashion that everybody in the room could understand, or his ability to take the chalkboard X's and O's and turn it into scheme that players could actually execute or reasonably execute was almost none.
How did the players look at him? Did the players look at him like
it was hard
no respect?
It was hard to respect a guy who couldn't throw a football.
Where were you?
I was in Seattle.
And so you had a coach in Seattle who couldn't throw a football.
But not only that, he would put us in impossible situations, like in goal line. Well, you're man to man on the tight end. Well, you asked me to play inside linebacker and be downhill on a running back, but somehow be man-to-man on the tight end. I can't do both. I can't split my body in half and do both. That tight end releases, and the running back is stepping to me.
Right.
I got to choose.
Any base block by the tight end puts you in the run game.
Even
a show of a base block, you got to grow.
Right. I've got to go forward and respect the run.
Right.
And now the tight end's in the back of the end zone, and then you give me a negative because I didn't cover the tight end.
He grades you down.
I can't do both, Coach. You're asking me to do something that's impossible. So those kind of situations would come up over and over with bad coaching.
Preseason starts tonight, and with it, a lot of real action. I know we had a game last week on a Thursday night, but tonight most of the NFL is underway. And with that, I'll say enjoy your football whenever you can get to it. For my man, Big Sexy, for Kyle Berry, and of course, my homeboy and my CU brethren, Chad Brown, I'm Big Al saying, have a great night, and go Broncos.
Way to play hurt, Al. Way to play hurt all day, baby.
That's right. Start the drill over.